Your weekly dose of bookish goodness, sharing our love of books and printed papers with the world. Most of the books will be quite old, some will be rare, but others will be new. All of them will be unusual or notable in some way. It's your way to visit the library without visiting the library. We will focus mainly on Britain and England, but not completely. Each adventure starts with a library find, but ends who knows where. Join us in the library, the roaring fire, and the leather chairs. Cigars optional.
Now, I've read this book before, but I really wanted to cover it for the podcast because it struck a note with me, because Edgar Speyer was a German national living in London towards the end of the 19th century. And he was also, therefore, in London as an influential businessman when the First World War started. And that's when his problems began. And this is partly why we have the traitor, scapegoat, spy reference in the title, although it's an obvious nod to John le Carré's Tinker Tailor, soldier spy as well. Speyer was initially seen with suspicion, and then later on there were calls for him to be interned with all the other Germans in the UK. He attracted particular attention because he was so prominent in both the US and the UK. He was a banker originally, but he also helped to fund the London Underground, and the London Underground would not be the large transport network that it is today without people like Speyer, who invested in it in its early days and saw its future long before anybody else. I wanted to mention that it's coming up soon in case you want to read the book for yourself, almost like a reading group. It seems to me the podcast could work as a reading club for those who want to follow some of the books that I'll be featuring. And the book starts with a comment from the author which says, "There is a danger not to be underestimated in resurrecting past miscarriages of justice with the prospect that glaring faults of yesteryear will illuminate lessons to be learnt today." And I think there are lessons, and in the way Germans were treated in the UK in the early part of the 20th century, which map across in some ways to the way Muslims and other minorities are treated whenever there is some kind of international incident, terror attack, or anything of that kind in the modern world. Sir Edgar moved in circles that were much higher than many of us. He lived with his wife Leonora in a grand house in 46 Grosvenor Street, Mayfair, which those of you who have done my Mayfair walk will know is very close to the American embassy, as it was until about 2018 anyway. Speyer was credited as the king of the London Underground, a public benefactor, patron of music and the arts, a friend of the Prime Minister. He was known to the press, and in fact his house was targeted by mobs as war got nasty. And of course Speyer originated as one of the Jewish merchant banking families of Frankfurt, so you've got the cloud of anti-Semitism lingering over the Speyers as well. And in fact, this book compares them to the Rothschilds. So they were highly regarded, very wealthy, highly influential. And this success perhaps attracted more attention than he would have got if he'd been somewhat more lowly in stature and perhaps a little bit less successful professionally. He was also successful in the US as well. But as well as funding the London Underground in its early days, he financed the Whitechapel Art Gallery as a founder trustee. He coordinated the financing of Captain Scott's Antarctic expeditions. Really just got involved in the arts as much as banking and business. By all accounts, was a decent chap. But this cloud of war spared nobody, and the book goes on to detail his fall from grace, which is a somewhat tragic story. Any other decade, you know, if he'd risen to prominence in the 1950s, 60s, or anything after that, or if he'd finished his career before 1900, we would never have heard of him. But he became really quite famous and was even mentioned by the king. The king was outraged that people were protesting and asking all Germans to be interned, and the king said to the wife of the then Prime Minister, "Let them take me first. All my blood is German. My relations are German. Let me, the king, be interned before Kessel or Speyer." So let us rewind a little bit through the life and context of Edgar Speyer in London, the head of a rich and famous bank and part of a banking dynasty which stretched across the globe. There was a Speyer in New York, and there was a Speyer in London, and there were Speyers in Germany in the late 1800s as well. As Anthony Lentin says, Speyer's name is virtually unknown today, except that he is one and indeed the first of only two men to ever be struck at the request of the government from the role of the Privy Council. In other words, Speyer was a Privy Councillor, one of those very few people who is entrusted with key constitutional decisions in the UK. And the Privy Council, of course, is headed by the monarch. Today, it would be the Prime Minister plus a few senior ministers plus a few lords. They are absolutely top people in terms of the British establishment. So Speyer has the unwelcome distinction of being the first of only two people ever to be removed forcibly from that Privy Council because of his allegiance to Germany at a time when Britain was very much anti-German. To try and understand or compare who Speyer was, he was described as the king of the London Underground, a public benefactor, a patron of music and the arts, and he did in fact start galleries, found theatre companies. He's done all kinds of arty things in music and art itself. He was a regular guest in Downing Street. The Prime Minister at the time was Herbert Henry Asquith. Edgar was known very well in all the right circles. So if I think of who that might be today, well, I wouldn't think of a banker. I would think of somebody not like Alan Sugar, who is well known enough. He's a self-made millionaire, whereas Speyer really had banking in the family. So I'm not sure of his early life, but he didn't feel like a self-made man. He felt like a guy who came from a very wealthy family from the beginning. In other words, he was used to people listening to him. He was used to getting his own way. And I think that should be understood. He was not used to having to justify his actions to anybody, least of all the King of England. So then you think of somebody like Bill Gates in America, or maybe somebody like James Dyson in the UK. But I'm struggling to think of somebody who is rich and famous enough to be compared to Speyer, because he was famous at the time, but not from a entrepreneurial, self-made background. So he wasn't like a rock star. Today, individual bankers are very far from the public gaze. Now, that's not only because of the financial crash. I think you would find it hard to mention unless you work in finance. And as someone who has worked in finance, I find it hard to think of anybody who is well known enough in a banking background to be compared to Speyer. So these were different times. Banks were not the global conglomerations that they are today. They were much more localized, much smaller, much more of an old boys network, especially in London. It's my challenge to you guys to think of somebody who is from a banking background, but famous enough to count as a Speyer for today. It's a very difficult thing to do. Okay, so I think I've made that point. As the subtitle of this book suggests, it is a case study, not a biography. So he doesn't put in enough about Speyer to be considered a biography of the man. It really focuses on his time in London and just gives you enough context to understand what happened in the 1910s to Speyer and early 1920s without going through everything that happened in his childhood and so on. So the question that the author gives us is, was Speyer a traitor, a scapegoat, or a spy? And he attempts to put before us the evidence so that we can decide for ourselves, which is a nice little mystery to set us off on. It is important to remember that in the 1890s and early 1900s, France, Germany, and Britain were pretty much allies. I mean, they traded together, they had cultural things in common. Obviously, they had a different language, they all had a different currency to each other. These were different times, but they sort of grudgingly rubbed along the same road, even if they're in different vehicles, is how I would think of it. And it wasn't until the First World War and the years leading up to that that Germany really became an issue for Britain. And so what we found was, a little bit like with the Russians in London today, London and Britain was full of Germans, full of French people, going about their business. They were fully integrated into society. They spoke brilliant English. Yes, they had, you know, odd names. They were clearly different, but they were perfectly acceptable in society, in the establishment. Speyer had become a Privy Councillor. He was a leading light in building the Metropolitan Railway, which opened in 1863. So there is absolutely no suggestion that I can find that there was any kind of grievance, grudge, or any kind of suspicion about Germans in Britain until probably 1910 or the very early 1900s at least. And indeed, Speyer had come to see London and England as his home. He felt more at home here than he did in Germany. And he travelled regularly to America to work on business with his members of his family. I think his brother ran the New York house and he had family running the bank in Germany. What I've done, which is unusual for me, is to make this a much longer and better book review than normal, because I think this man and this topic is so fascinating, as I've said, especially for me with a German family, that I've put my notes, the highlights and shares that I've made in my ebook edition on Goodreads. So you can see all of the notes that I'm using, and there are more on Goodreads than I have time for in the podcast. So we arrive at the First World War, 1914, and as the war intensified, so did feeling against the 58,000 Germans resident in Britain. So this was not just two or three people. 60,000 Germans were fully integrated, living in Britain. Most of them would have been living in the southeast and London, of course, just as they are today. But it became difficult for them. And the people, the press, even started to make a distinction between enemy aliens, in other words, proper Germans, and the 6,500 or so, 10% of people who were naturalized. In other words, they had taken steps to make themselves British, but of course were German by birth, with German names and German families back in Germany. So around 10% of the British resident Germans considered themselves to be British, or, you know, more than half British, or they were quite happy here and didn't ever want to go back to Germany, especially during the war. So in January, Lord Crawford raised with the Lord Chancellor the possibility of revoking the citizenship of these 6,500 naturalized Germans. And of course, Speyer was one of these. So things were on the turn, and I suspect it was a frightening time to be in London in particular. I think possibly in the distant provinces, this was not so intense. But in London, where there were mobs, there were the possibilities of large crowds, demonstrations, and indeed, Speyer's house in Grosvenor Square was attacked. And this is where the king has his famous outburst, where he says, if you're going to intern the Germans, you can intern me first, because I'm German and everybody in my family is German. So this had a particular poignancy. The king considered himself to be German during a time when Britain and Germany were at war. And this was going to be a bad war. This was going to be a really bad thing that lasted for longer than people expected, that killed millions of people and that affected millions of families for generations. And this antagonism that began here continued on and ended up causing the Second World War. So these were serious times. Nobody knew quite what was coming then, of course. But nevertheless, you have a German king, a self-proclaimed German king of Britain, and people are, particularly the press, are leading the charge to get these Germans sent home, effectively. And you can imagine what reception they might have had, because the German people would have seen them as British. They'd all turn up en masse in Germany during a war. They would have been thrown straight into prison or worse. And of course, that's what people wanted here, was for them to be thrown into prison for the duration of the war. But by the time the US entered the war in April 1917, so, you know, it's an easy target to say too little too late, but enroll the Americans to steal the glory at the end, James Speyer and Eduard Beit von Speyer had severed the connection with each other's banking houses. But until then, Speyer and Co. had continued, as before, to conduct large-scale business with Germany. So the London house severed its connections with Germany earlier, but the American house in April 1917 was forced to cut its ties with the German banks. So the tide is turning in America as well as in Britain. And because Speyer was so rich and famous and well-known, he became a lightning rod for a lot of this denaturalization, internment argument. And he became a subject, along with a guy called Cassell, who is not particularly the subject of this book. They were sort of mentioned. If anybody was to talk in generic terms about denaturalizing, sending home Germans, Speyer and Cassell were the two names that they used as examples. That's how famous they were in the press, not just in social establishment circles. And of course, Speyer started to do things which were planning for various possible outcomes. So any war has two possible outcomes. Either one side wins or the other side wins. And of course, because the country of Speyer's birth was fighting the country that he now lives in, he made investigations to see what would happen should either of those outcomes occur. And he obviously continued to write to members of his family in Germany, even towards the end of the war, when such things were discouraged, frowned upon, and possibly illegal. So this is where things really start to go badly wrong for Speyer. the British Foreign Office and British establishment starts to collaborate, some would say collude, with the American authorities to gather evidence about Speyer's business and personal activities in America, London, and beyond, with the specific aim of trying to get his British citizenship revoked. So there is a general mood against naturalized Germans living in Britain, and there is a specific action focused on Speyer by the British government, pretty much in response to public demand. And they don't sort of, it's not the situation that they've been presented with evidence and then they charge him with a crime and then they have a trial. They decided to have a trial and then went about looking for the evidence. And this is kind of democracy at its worst or lowest, because it shows how the arm of the state can, in certain situations when the public demand is so great, just pander to the mob. And that's exactly what happened to Speyer. The government turned against him secretly, behind closed doors and without his knowledge, and began tracking him. They opened his mail. They sought evidence from America, and the Americans were actively looking for small slip-ups that they could then turn into a big story and hold a trial and remove his citizenship. I think as somebody who has never lived abroad or emigrated anywhere, it's hard to understand the meaning of this today because the world is so globalized. It really doesn't matter what passport you have most of the time. You can travel anywhere you like. Even if you have to get a visa, it's quite easy. There are very, very few countries. Even Saudi Arabia now allows tourists. You know, there are very few countries that will not let you in as long as you have a passport from somewhere and it's not a country that they are actively fighting against or having some kind of diplomatic beef with. At a time of war or at a time of pandemic or a time of crisis, which passport you hold suddenly becomes important. And you suddenly, with Brexit too, you suddenly have to think carefully about which passport is best for you. So now you have German residents in Britain applying for German passports. You have British people in Germany with British passports trying to get German passports to try and make sure that whatever happens with Brexit, they'll be okay and their families will be able to continue living wherever they are today. This happened at the First World War as well. People started to really think, okay, I'm a naturalized British citizen. What happens if Germany wins the war? They're probably going to come to Britain, occupy the country and round up all the German traitors. So the British people saw the Germans as traitors and the German people would see those living in Britain as traitors. And that's why I like this book so much. It really makes you look at today's world and think about who is who and where do you live and what relevance does that have to your life. So when you hear recently about black and mixed race people in Britain feeling on the edge of things, feeling singled out, when you have European people in Britain feeling marginalized and singled out through Brexit, when you have the pandemic marginalizing BAME people and the poor as well, and if those two things happen to intersect, the pandemic will affect you disproportionately. In the financial crisis, which was not on this scale, of course, where the money was transacted and where the transactions were domiciled started to have implications about how the governments would handle those debts. So suddenly it was important whether your mortgage had been bought by a Canadian bank and sold on to some Saudis. In the good times, that nobody cared. So it's when there's a war, when there's a crisis, when there's a disease, suddenly people have to look at themselves and think, okay, am I British? Am I German? Who am I? And what do I do if the worst happens? And the worst could be Germany winning, or for some people, it could be Britain winning. These kind of crises really push you to understand who you are, what you want, where your family's going, where you live, and all the most fundamental things about your life, which do not get asked in peacetime. And this is why I think this story is so great, because Speyer has been really pushed. And of course, he's wealthy. He's not an average person just trying to make a living somewhere. He is wealthy. He knows the Prime Minister. He knows the King. He's famous. He today would have zero sympathy. He's the Elon Musk of 1920s Britain. Zero sympathy. People could easily just say, this guy is different from us. He's crazy. He's German. He's rich. He's never going to struggle no matter what. And although that is all true, I do think that philanthropic, wealthy people 100 years ago had more sympathy and standing in society than they would have today. So today everybody criticizes Bill Gates, full of his vaccine activities and his philanthropy. Certainly in Europe, he is heavily criticised. Whereas 100 years ago, Bill Gates would have been a establishment figure. He would have been looked up to. He would have been given a title if he lived in the UK. He would have been Lord of something. And he would have been a pillar of society, as Speyer was. So business people, rich people, yes, they were different. They were not as sympathetic as the deserving poor, as Dickens might have called them. We were not as cynical about these individuals as we would be today. I think Speyer today would possibly have an even harder time than he had in 1914 and beyond into the early 20s. And in fact, his trial for denaturalization didn't happen until years after the war. It took them so long to figure out what they wanted to do that the war was over for 3 years before he had his citizenship revoked, which is ridiculous. Really, at the end of the war, they should have said, okay, you know, whatever happened during the war, let's leave it there. Let's move on. But they didn't. They continued to hound him. But the way Speyer was treated, and he did lose the case, he was denaturalized, he was humiliated, and it left a stain on his record. It left a mark on his life and his attitudes to Britain for the rest of his life. Because in his eyes, he just couldn't really understand, or he refused to understand and pander to these stupid, as he saw them, trivialities. Yes, he did research what would happen if Germany won the war and how he might be treated, but so would you. It's just common sense. And if you're a successful businessman, you're always looking at risk and the future and predicting what might happen, trying to mitigate. That's just human nature. So in his eyes, he was British. He'd made a load of money, which had gone to Britain in taxes. He'd founded the Metropolitan Railway, had given Britain a railway system, which is still the envy of the world today. He was kind of a hero in his own eyes. And until 1914, pretty much everybody would have agreed. He would have been and was a pillar of the establishment. He was a Privy Councillor. And then a few short years later, not only is he thrown out of the Privy Council, he's actually thrown out of Britain, effectively. You can imagine the sense of burning injustice. But, and there is a but, Speyer did not do himself any favours. I think his background, the fact that he was used to getting his own way, meant that he made some silly errors, avoidable errors, in failing to treat these charges seriously enough at the early stages. He didn't get rid of his connections to America and Germany quickly enough. It looked like he was dragging his feet, even though perhaps he wasn't. It looked like he was reluctant to assimilate with Britain when the war came. And of course, he was hedging his bets, as any good banker would, as any gambler would. But this was willfully misinterpreted by the British establishment as a means to get rid of the risk and the threat of Speyer, because he was mentioned so often in the press and he was a lightning rod for internment. But he was harshly treated. But the details of this, and of course, was he a spy? Well, you'll need to read the book to find out. Not in the way that we think of one. So this is a great book. I've read it twice now. I think it's fabulous on its own terms, but it's also fabulous because it allows me to think about my background and about how people who migrate to Britain are seen today and treated today. You've got Windrush, you've got Brexit. These issues, although we don't have a war yet, we do have things which are forcing people to think about their nationality, about their passport, about where they choose to live if they have that choice. And that's why I think this book is well worth your time. It's called Banker, Traitor, Scapegoat Spy: The Troublesome Case of Sir Edgar Speyer by Anthony Lentin. As I say, I will post in the show notes my Kindle highlights so you can see it on Goodreads. Go and get it. Get the paperback, get the ebook, however you choose to read this book, add it to your list for lockdown. It is brilliant.
Library Discoveries is available wherever you prefer to subscribe to your podcasts.